Okay, Mr. Brandegan.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, thank you for this opportunity to argue a second time here today. On behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Mr. Charles Breyer, my name is Michael Frandino, still, of the Aspen Law Firm, and also is Jason Anna and Matthew Allison of the Indian Environmental Law Group are with me. This appeal concerns whether summary judgment on statute of limitations was improper, where a reasonable juror could have concluded that Mr. Breyer did not have sufficient information required for accrual under the reasonableness prong of the discovery rule. In assessing this issue, the district court and the Conoco defendants both focus on Mr. Breyer's candid reply that he recalled a physician at OU stating that benzene from his jobs and residences likely contributed to his AML. Initially, the focus of that single fact, focus on that single fact, fails to account for the fact that Mr. Breyer lived in over a dozen residences and worked multiple blue-collar jobs, many of which involved exposure to numerous chemicals and petroleum products. Indeed, with respect to Mr. Breyer's residences, when Mr. Breyer was diagnosed in 2006, it had been 31 years since he lived near the refinery.
Now, I don't want to pick on you about a preservation issue like in the last case, the Metro case, but I have a waiver question for you in this case. As far as pinpointing the source of the benzene emissions because of his multiple addresses, you do argue that in your reply brief. I did not see that in your opening brief. Did I overlook that? In other words, in your reply brief, you make this argument that you're highlighting right now, that there were a number of addresses that could have been the source of the benzene emissions that the plaintiff had attributed to the 2006 doctor comment, but I don't see that as an independent argument in your opening brief.
I believe, Your Honor, we highlighted in a footnote all the residences that he's lived in.
So tell me what footnote you're talking about.
Sorry. I believe it's footnote 1, Your Honor, on page 3 of the brief, highlights the addresses and the dates where he lived on those addresses.
So, yeah, and you do have a long laundry list in footnote 1 of where he lived. Where in footnote 1 do you say that he couldn't have attributed the leukemia to the Conoco refinery when he was told this by the doctor in 2006 because of the multiplicity of addresses that he lived away from the refinery? You don't make that argument, do you?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that brings up an important point that that's not in the record anywhere, that the residences that the OU physician was talking about was the residence that he lived in 30 years ago for the first 23 years of his life. That's not in the facts. So I believe that the district court made the inference that when the OU physician said your residences and jobs may have contributed to your diagnosis, that he made the inference that he was talking about when you lived near the refinery 30 years ago. But that's an improper inference. We're not the party moving for summary judgment. We deserve inferences to be made in our favor.
Well, and I'm not trying to pick on you, really,
right?
Not, but what we sit in judgment as a reviewing court over what the district court did, and the district court can only rule on what you present to the district court. And then typically we consider only those arguments that are made in an opening brief. And so you're asking us to overturn what the district court did because of uncertainty of what the source for the benzene emissions was because of he lived all over the place. And that's true. If you had made that argument to the district court, or made that argument in your opening brief, then I think you'd certainly be entitled to review by us of that argument. But when you make that argument for the first time in your reply brief, your adversary doesn't have a chance to respond to it.
Your Honor, I can just point, like I said, I can point to the fact that we highlighted the many different, and it's a factual matter that, you know, we did raise. And if you feel that it was not raised completely, then, and there's that's all I can do to change your mind and cite that. We did cite the many different places that he lived at.
Let me, assuming for a moment that we have the doctor informed him in 2006 that exposure to benzene at some time in his life may have been the cause of his disease. Would you agree that that triggered in him an obligation to investigate further?
Your Honor, I believe that's one of many facts in this case. And I'm not saying it didn't trigger any sort of investigative possibility, but I'm saying if you have to look at all the facts in this person's life, and again, I would, you know, somewhat rewind to the Monk quote that I read earlier. And
well,
that
Mon,
is,
let me ask sure. you a little bit about that. I mean, in Monk, we found that case, it was relevant that some of the plaintiffs actually did ask their doctors what caused my leukemia, and the doctors told them that the cause was unknown. The doctor didn't say exposure to benzene. The doctor said, we don't know. It may be idiopathic. You know, so there, it's very different than a situation that we have here where he's told, and this is after he's been a plaintiff in a class action and actually received a settlement related to the Conoco facility, and he's told, your leukemia has probably been caused by exposure to this chemical substance. I mean, at the very least, it doesn't that say, I right now have to start investigating whether I have a cause of action?
Your Honor, I think that's certainly a fact to consider. But another one I think to consider is the relatively short period of time where he had leukemia. He achieved remission in about the same year, I believe, that he was first diagnosed. And so that's going to be a distinguishing factor in this case. You're going to the doctor when you're sick. You're not going back. Your insurance is not paying for you to go back and talk to them about what the causes were. I mean, this was a man who had worked many blue-collar jobs over the...
Any case law that would support tolling of the statute of limitations during a period of remission, or another example, if I slip and fall and break my leg, that if the leg gets healed, the statute's tolled?
Your Honor, the way I would respond is, again, the quote in Mon is that why cancer is different because there's so many different things that can cause it. So in a slip and fall case, it's much different because, you know, you kind of know where your injury was. It's where you slipped and fell. I mean, that was the cause. Carcinogens, you're exposed to them all the time. Many of them are just natural elements, you know, in the environment. And there's nobody to sue. So your incentive to go out and look for a potential cause of action is reduced. And that's, I think, what the Mon case stands for.
Well, the Mon case, the holding in the Mon case is that in these cases, we will allow a discovery rule because these are exceptional circumstances. It certainly didn't say there's no statute of limitations in a cancer case. And to the extent that you're concerned the statute of limitations is too short, that's a decision for the legislature, obviously, not for us.
And we wouldn't say that we're entitled to open-ended discovery rule in this case. What we would say is that the conclusion that no reasonable juror could come to the conclusion that, given the conflicting facts in this case, that he was not necessarily on notice that he needed to start, you know, looking right then, and that would have led to the refinery.
The summary judgment materials indicate, I think, decades before that he moved away from the refinery, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And don't those same summary judgment materials indicate that he knowingly and deliberately did that to get away from the refinery?
I believe that there is a piece of his deposition where he said that was part of the reason why he moved east. But I think that that's an important fact to focus on. The reason why this is appropriate for a jury determination is that his explanation of that would be, or what he said, is that I moved out there and I thought it was safe out there. And guess what? I've lived out there for the last 30 years and I never got cancer because I'm not near the refinery anymore. So to say that he moved away from something 30 years and then you're going to point back to the fact that for the first 20 years of his life he lived near the refinery...
No, what I'm suggesting is that in 2006, when he's diagnosed, He had previously intentionally moved to get away from the refinery. That ought to trigger some investigation.
Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time, so can I address
you can certainly answer the question.
The way I would answer that question, Your Honor, is I believe that that's a fact for a jury determination, because I think it supports the fact that he thought he had moved far enough away from the refinery where it didn't cause him harm.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what's in his mind, not whether he moved away, he thought he was safe. I'm saying that in 2006, once he had moved decades before intentionally to get away from the refinery, doesn't that indicate in 2006 he should have investigated whether the refinery was the source of his cancer?
Your Honor, I believe that because of the fact of the different things about it, he believed he was safe from the refinery because he had moved away. And he also worked in so many blue-collar jobs where his exposures were there, that going back over your decades of experiences of exposure through a blue-collar job to chemicals, I don't know that that's a reasonable approach. If there's any more questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the appellee. We'll try to pronounce your name because I probably will butcher it.
You will not be the first nor the last to mispronounce that name. It's McKillop.
Thank you.
McKillop. Yes, I'm Catherine McKillop, and along with Brett Young, I'm representing ConocoPhillips, the appellee here. Your Honor, what I'd like to talk about today is the undisputed facts that were the support of the summary judgment that was granted by the district court. Largely, these facts were from Mr. Breyer himself and from the testimony in his deposition, highlighting five of them. First, as you noted earlier, Mr. Breyer lived very near the Ponca City Refinery for some time, and because of his physical reaction to the emissions from the refinery, he decided to move away. The next fact that's from Mr. Breyer himself is that over his working life in the late 60s, he worked in the refinery and once again had physical responses to the emissions that he experienced while working in the refinery. Then in 1998 through 2006, when he was diagnosed, he worked for the city of Ponca City, but in that job, he worked on sewer lines that were coming out of the refinery. He again had physical reactions to what he believed were the emissions from the refinery. And as late as 2005, he described in his deposition a more severe response to emissions that he had that he believed were from the refinery. Taking those two, those series of facts, adding to them that in the 1989-1990, he was a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the refinery in which Mr. Breyer says that he knew that he was compensated, he was settling plaintiff. He was compensated for his exposure to what he called pollution in the air, the soil, and the groundwater. More particularly, in his petition, it specifically states that there's a threat of future health problems from the emissions that the plaintiffs had experienced over the prior years, and that the complaint specifically identified and alleged that the refinery emitted benzene and noted that benzene was a cancer-causing substance.
Was there any evidence that he actually read the complaint or saw the complaint? I mean, he wasn't a named plaintiff.
He was not a named plaintiff, and there's no evidence that he read it. There is, of course, I would assume that as being a plaintiff, he would be charged with a judicial admission of knowing what was in the petition the allegations in his class member petition. But no, there's no evidence that he read it.
We all get those notices in the mail, and they go right in the circular file.
Yeah, absolutely. And every time I do that, I think, should I read this? And I don't, but I get it anyway. But the last part of the story is the one that the court started with and probably the most important part. When he was in the hospital, again, these are Mr. Breyer's words. When he was in the hospital and was diagnosed with AML, his doctors were asking him, where did you live and where did you work? He responded, And that's when the doctor said, I think that your AML was most likely caused by exposure to benzene in your work and where you live. That's all we know, but that is what we know. And so, Your Honors, I believe that he had everything he needed to know in 2006, really to file the lawsuit against ConocoPhillips, certainly had enough information that he was on duty to use reasonable diligence to attempt to find out if he had a lawsuit and who that lawsuit would have been against. If the court doesn't have any further questions on that, I'll move to just make two other points. Appellant's briefs, they talked about the necessity for an expert in a long discussion about the different cases that the appellant has talked about today. Those cases are really irrelevant, largely to this case in one way, because Mr. Breyer actually talked to an expert. His doctor was the one who told him the cause of his AML. And so in those cases, as the court pointed out, there were cases where the science wasn't there yet, or in poor Ms. Bayless's case where she kept going and asking people and they were telling her the wrong thing or they didn't know. And so those cases really aren't relevant to what we have. Just one point on the quasi-estoppel point, and that is that what I just want to emphasize, what I said in the brief, is that the plaintiffs have not come forward with any case that shows any court anywhere has applied that principle to the discovery rule and limitations. So unless the court has further questions, I ask that the district court's order be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brandina, we'll give you, one extra minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. In an attempt to answer the initial question you had, I sort of relooked at the opening brief, and there was an additional, on page 15 of our brief, we do mention about, where he lived and that he had been in the Circle Drive neighborhood, but in 1975, he moved away to a place that he felt was a safe distance from the refinery. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but that was an additional site I found. Otherwise, I'd be happy to answer any questions the panel has.
Okay. Thank you. We have no further questions. Thank you, both counsel, for your excellent advocacy. This matter will be submitted. While we're waiting.